Hey, Steppers, it's Andrew here. Just giving you all a disclaimer that unfortunately we have some technical difficulties at the end of this episode again. The audio is a little off sync in the last, again, 20 minutes or so. We have been going through some trial and error of how to record while Matt and I are in separate rooms, social distancing, but we promise that this won't happen again. We think we've got the situation at least under control for our next week. But if you have any creative ideas of how to not have this out of sync audio and able to record over the phone, we are all ears. Please send us some ideas. But until then, we apologize and promise it won't happen again. And hope you enjoy this week's episode on One for Lou of the Cuckoo's Nest. Hope to hear from you soon. Bye.
Oh, come on. You're not going to say that now. You're not going to say that now. You're going to pull that henhouse shit now when the vote the chief just voted it was 10 to 9. Now, I want that television set turned on right now.
I don't think he's overly psychotic.
No, I want something done!
I think he's dangerous.
Jesus, I mean, you guys do nothing but complain about how you can't stand it in this place here, and then you haven't got the guts just to walk out. I mean, what do you think you are, for Christ's sake, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
Welcome to Step and Repeat, a weekly movies and awards show podcast. I'm Matt, and I'm joined, as always, here today by Andrew.
Hello.
And yes, you just heard the trailer for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is our movie of the week. So yeah, last week we put it up to a vote. We put four classic movies out there. Rocky, Gone with the Wind, Sound of Music. Oh yeah. And the winner this week was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That was my pick last week. So I guess I guess I won 2 weeks in a row. Yeah. Just wanted to throw that out there, but I promise I'm not rigging this system, but you know, I guess my movies are just a little more popular.
There is a really interesting difference between the Facebook and Twitter votes. I was like really fascinated following the votes on this one because we add both our Facebook and Twitter votes. And Facebook was kind of going in one direction, or at least Facebook was a little more mixed, and Twitter was going another direction. And at first, the Sound of Music on Twitter was like in the lead for a couple days. So I was like, okay, we're going to watch the Sound of Music. And then like the last day, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest like kind of surged out of nowhere on Twitter.
I promise I had nothing to do with it. But yeah. I'm so glad I didn't have to.
The Sound of Music is so good. I rewatched The Sound of Music anyway because of I was like getting ready to watch it for our show, and then it ended up being One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest out of nowhere. So I was like so surprised.
I'm convinced I'm going to go my whole life without seeing Sound of Music. I'm kind of okay with.
It is on Disney Plus.
I'm sure it is. I'm also convinced I'm going to go my whole life without seeing Rocky.
You, I just want to say that you picked the Sound of Music, so you know.
I know.
Would have had to made the bed, or I screwed that up. Sleep in the bed you make, or whatever the expression is.
Well, you know, it's water over the dam or under the bridge, wherever you'd like to put it.
So. Yeah.
I think that was a scramble because I didn't make my picks until like the last minute last week. And that was like the first one I saw. I was like, oh yeah, I've never seen Sound of Music. I think a lot of people are going to beat me up for this. So I'll just throw it in there. But yeah, one day I'll watch it, I think. But yeah, so before we get to our review of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I guess do we want to talk a little bit about some of the industry updates while we've been in quarantine?
Yeah, it's just good news all around. Everything's cheery and rosy.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a great time to be alive.
Yeah, you know, Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, he found the cure for coronavirus. It's just huge.
He's now doing a masterclass on Facebook or whatever these masterclass things are.
No. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just like him and Anna Wintour, like, are doing masterclasses online, which you can pay like what, $200 for, like, to hear them talk about their lives and whose asses they had to kiss to get where they are.
I know. So. Like, if I wanted to like read, like, or if I wanted to listen to 30 minutes of lies for $200, I would, you know, get a Fox News subscription.
I was going to say, I turned on the weekly coronavirus White House Task Force briefing.
Oh my God. At least those are entertaining, if not depressing. Depressingly for our country.
They're depressingly entertaining.
Yeah.
Or entertainingly depressing.
Yeah, both.
Oh, God. So, yeah. So, anyway, more streaming services are now available.
Oh, my God. Do you have... I assume you're talking about Quibi.
Yeah. Like, who downloaded Quibi? Not I.
I don't know a single soul that downloaded Quibi.
I was reading some of the subscribers. I think they only had, like, what, 300,000 in the first week, whereas, like, Disney Plus had, like, somewhere to, like, 5 million something.
Oh. So, for those who don't know, we'll initiate you real quick. Quibi is the new streaming service that's only available on your phone / tablet, whatever. And Quibi is short for Quick Bites. And the platform, the whole purpose of the platform is so you can watch content that is like 10 minutes or less. So they have all these drama shows, comedy shows, and like reality shows with like huge stars, or at least big stars. And the idea is like it's for the people who are on the go and can only watch shows that are 10 minutes or less and want to watch it on their phone. But like,
yeah, but no one's on the go right now.
I know,
nobody's on the go right now. And like that, so the concept of like just watching dramas or whatever, like on your phone or tablet, just doesn't appeal to me. I have like no reason. Like, I don't have Apple Plus for that reason, because I don't want to watch it on my phone. I don't have an Apple TV, and I can't get it on my Samsung or PlayStation. So I don't like want to download it, and like I don't want to watch shows and tablets on, or shows in my tablets and iPhone.
Well, real quick on Apple TV Plus, you can watch it online. You can just go to like appletvplus.com or whatever and watch it.
Right. But so that's on your laptop, and like, that's fine. But like, I don't like the idea of watching shows. I can't watch shows and movies on my laptop. It's just.
Really? That's where I watch most of mine.
I can't do it. I have to watch them on my TV, or else like I get distracted or just can't concentrate. And I've tried to watch several shows and movies on my tablet, even though like I have a Surface and I can like bring it with me and everything. I do not find the idea appealing of watching stuff on my tablet. I don't know why. I guess because there's too many distractions, or I'm like where I can like watch on TV, I can just focus. I just focus on that, I guess. So
the reason that I brought that up, that Apple TV is available on your laptop, is because Apple did like a really bad job of getting the word out there of how you could watch their content. Yeah. So, whereas Quibi, as much as I kind of make fun of it, like at least did a good job of explaining what their product is. So, even though I think it's a bad idea for a product.
Yeah.
And so you can watch Sophie Turner in a plane crash every 10 minutes. Like, okay.
I don't even know what shows are on there. I haven't done a deep dive enough into Quibi to even care.
Don't care. I mean, to me, it's just like a slightly higher production valued Snapchat TV show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, or like one of these like Facebook TV shows.
No, there was a really good Facebook TV show that got canceled called Sorry for Your Loss with Elizabeth Olsen. That was really good. But
yeah, again, I can't get into the Facebook shows. It's just too many platforms.
I know, but at least that's free.
Yeah, we're gonna like Verizon or something, or someone, AT&T need to come up with some, Comcast need to come up with some kind of like channel guide for all of your streaming shows, or like, you know, like you're going to have, you know, your premium TV, like HBO and all that, Showtime. And then you need like your Optimum TV channels, like Netflix and Hulu and all that, HBO Go, like just in one place. It's like, yeah. It's so annoying. That's just like all over the place. Just, it's just too much. Like,
HBO Max, by the way, is still launching next month. They're still planning to launch in May. So
yeah. Are they going to give people like a free month or something? Like,
I don't know yet. I'm sure we'll hear about it more.
I don't even know what shows are coming, like special shows are coming to HBO Plus.
So the big,
not that I'm asking you to like promote any, but like, I don't even know anything.
The interesting part of it is that, HBO Max was going to have the Friends reunion, and that can no longer take place because they can't get together, coronavirus. And so that was going to be available like on the first day of HBO Max's launch in May, and now that's no longer happening, but the launch is still happening. So that was supposed to be their big rollout event, and now
what's going to be on it? It sounds like it's going to be a huge failure when it first begins.
Well, like, it depends how you define like failure. Like, what are your expectations? So my
expectation is to see something new, some different content that HBO Go and HBO Now don't have. What is this?
So they will have things that, like Friends, for example, things that weren't previously available on HBO Go and HBO Max. But as far as new content goes, like, probably very little at first. So, I don't know. I'm going to have to wait till they're going to have to sell me on it first.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll get it, but whatever.
Yeah. So I know like HBO has some kind of contract or deal with Warner Brothers. So they put like all the Warner Brothers movies on HBO. So I guess, are they going to take all the Warner Brothers television shows, like Friends? I think it's Warner Brothers television. Are they going to put them on HBO Max? Like, I don't know.
They have to like negotiate for individual shows. Like, they had to they had to pay a pretty penny for Friends, for example.
Yeah. So like the OC and Gilmore Girls, like those are like Warner Brothers shows too. So I wonder if they're going to like put those in there, like take Gilmore Girls from Netflix. So who knows?
So that's still launching next month. At least that's something new to at least look forward to, because movies keep getting pushed back.
Speaking of which, Soul got pushed back.
We lost Soul this week.
I know. We lost our souls.
Too real.
I know.
And Soul was the Disney Pixar June release. So
yeah, this was like the big Disney Pixar movie of the year.
Yeah, I think it got pushed back to November. This isn't surprising. Everyone, like, we all kind of expected this, but like the goalposts, I think, like, just keeps getting pushed back like further and further. And so now it's kind of the July movies everyone's looking at to see if they'll get pushed back, because like summer is essentially gone at this point.
Yeah.
Summer is canceled.
So our summer movie season is going to be the fall.
Yeah.
mixed in with our Oscar movies, so it's just going to be crazy. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a big advocate of them pushing back the Oscars by a couple months to allow.
Yeah.
Which is probably what they're going to do.
So, like a big thing of if they're going to have the Oscars or not, or like if it's going to be quote unquote business as usual, is going to be how the fall festivals play, because right now Cannes, the big French film festival, is like not going to happen. It was supposed to happen in May, and then it was going to happen in June, and now it's just like postponed indefinitely, probably until next year. So
Have them in like January and February, when like Sundance is, and like,
well, like, they can't
back to back.
They definitely can't do that in Cannes, because part of the appeal of Cannes is the yachts. So and same thing with like TIFF, Toronto International Film Festival, like in September, they can't have it too late in the year because it's too cold. So but that's like in September. So you have like all these like big September, October festivals, and it's, I think everyone's kind of waiting with bated breath to see if they happen, and if they happen as normal. Like, there's some talk of doing digital festivals where, like, you pay money and you get, like, access online, but that's a kind of controversial idea, because part of the whole idea around festivals is, like, you get buyers, so studios come in and, like, buy the movie that they see so that they can put it out to the masses and everyone sees, and that if you have a digital festival, that disincentivizes all that.
Right. And there's no camaraderie when it comes to, like, digital platforms. There's no, you know, hustle and backdoor deals and all this going on. And not that, like, it's all a bad thing, but you don't have, like, the same one-on-one interaction that you do with, like, studio representatives, and between, like, the actors and people that are representing the films. So it's just not the same experience at all.
For campaign stops for the Oscars too. So it's like,
exactly. Yeah.
And that, like, could not happen if they are canceled. So now all eyes are kind of just on the fall, seeing what, if anything's going to happen. But, like, if we flatten the curve before, if we all social distance, we'll hopefully be okay by the fall. Hopefully.
Yeah. And speaking of canceled things, Comic-Con was just canceled. They just announced that.
First time in history.
Yeah. First time in history. History of Comic-Con. I mean, I'm not surprised by this move. I think it's a smart decision on their part. But again, like, that's a big... Comic-Con is a big platform, a big push for studios to get the word out about their big upcoming movies. Not only for that purpose, but to get vendors out to, you know, small businesses and comics and artists to come out, and just a worldwide event where people can come support local talent. And that's just, it's not going to happen. A lot of people rely on Comic-Con for money. And it's just, I don't know what some of these people are going to do. A lot of these conventions are being canceled or pushed back all around the nation. I know in our local area in Washington, D.C., AustinCon is our, like, Comic-Con, and that got pushed back to December, and a lot of local artists around here depend on that too. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. But
no, it's like,
as far as film,
it's super sad, because, like, when South by Southwest was canceled a couple months ago, like, they had to lay off so many people. They had to lay off, like, a third of their workforce. So, like, I'm sure the same things are happening with Comic-Con and Cannes and all these other industry related events.
A lot of people work and volunteer. It's a big weekend, a big weekend for a lot of folks, and a lot of people rely on that money. The volunteers who work, you know, they rely on that money, and just it's really sad. It sucks, you know. So anyway,
kind of to that end, I will plug a really cool service that is available to everyone right now, because one of the things that I've talked about recently is, like, I'm concerned about the future of indie movie theaters, independent movie theaters, because, like, sometimes they struggle to, like, find business already. So what a whole block of indie theaters did was they launched a sort of streaming service. So all these indie movies across the country created this thing called Kino Marquee, K-I-N-O Marquee. And that you can, like, go online, go to Kino Marquee, and, like, click on the movie that you want to watch. And you select, like, your theater in your screening room, like your local theater, your local independent theater, and you rent a movie, like an indie movie. There are only, like, a handful of titles available at this point, but the proceeds go to that theater, like the theater that you would have gone to watch this movie otherwise. And so I thought that was really cool. And so I'm like, so I spent $12 to watch this really cool Brazilian movie called Bacurau, which, if you are a fan of the movie Parasite and you're looking for movies, like, similar to Parasite thematically, I would definitely recommend it. It's like really cool and weird. It's like if Parasite were a spaghetti western and like Tarantino-esque. Yeah. I would see check out Bacurau and Kino Marquee in general if you want to support independent film.
Yeah, I'll definitely be checking that out. I'm actually on here now. There's a movie I kind of want to see that I'm probably going to check out some point sometime soon. It's called Extraordinary with Will Forte. I think I've heard it's pretty interesting, so we'll see. I want to check it out. But yeah, I'm definitely a fan of our local cinema and indie cinemas here, and I'll do anything I can to make sure help them stay up and running. So.
With our new stimulus checks.
Exactly, yeah. So this is a great platform, and I'll definitely be checking it out. So, and you should too. So, yeah, that's great. Kino Marquee. It's Kino Marquee. So
yeah,
check it out.
Anything else big you want to want the world to know?
Well, so everyone should know that the perfect cast of Dune is starting to come out with some images from the unyet released and yet to have a release date, probably, movie. So Timothée Chalamet first posted a picture of him himself on Instagram, I believe, and then Vanity Fair came out with a whole spread of pictures from Dune, and then a couple other actors from the movie started posting on their Instagrams just some on set early teaser releases images from the movie, so it just got me that much more excited, which for a movie that's probably not even going to come out this year.
Well, it does have a release date, I will say that. It does
have a release date now.
Yes,
but it's not, I know it's supposed to come out December 18th. Yeah. But I have a feeling it's gonna push back. And I was excited because that's the day before my birthday, and we're gonna do a whole birthday thing out with it, but I don't think it's gonna happen.
Fingers crossed. Who knows what they'll do? I've low-key want to know like what sort of information like the Warner Brothers head is Dune as a Warner Brothers movie. So how do they make those decisions like of what to when to push your movie back?
I wonder if they're gonna like hold strong, hold firm on the stage.
I mean,
like, no one can have this.
The fact that they had this like this first look in Vanity Fair is a good sign that they're like steady the course. So for Dune, mm-hmm. at least, because like this is like the sort of trickle effect that they have of releasing a movie. So these first pictures, and then like in a couple months there would be a trailer. To be honest, the trailer was probably going to happen at Comic-Con, but like that ain't happening. So then there'll be a trailer in a couple months over the summer probably, and then final results in December. But it looks dope.
Yeah, I'm excited. Timothée Chalamet looks perfect. I can't wait. Rebecca Ferguson too. I absolutely adore Rebecca Ferguson. I think everything about her is just perfect. She's a great actress, and she will get her Oscar one day. I promise you that. And Josh Brolin looks great in the movie as well. Just a huge, huge cast. Josh Brolin,
it's a huge Dave story. Bautista,
Stellan Skarsgård. Yeah, exactly. It's gonna be. It's what like so far. It's like at least a 3-part movie, if not more. So.
I know it's more. It's going to be more than one. And the way that the Vanity Fair article made it sound is like they're contractually obliged to do more than one. So it didn't sound as if like if it's successful, it's more of when they're going to be filming more.
Well, Denis Villeneuve came out and said
Denis Villeneuve. I pronounced it wrong for so long.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Denis Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Well, sorry. Well, now that I've been checked on my pronunciation, Denis Villeneuve came out and said that this has to be at least a 2-part film, and he's this is what he's fully planning on. I know they've halted production, but it has to be at least a 2-part film. to tell the whole story, if not more. So that makes me think, like, okay, so this is just Dune part one. So it makes me wonder, is this going to be like a full story, or is it just going to be like cut off somewhere in the middle there?
Well, so the book is still on my shelf, but my understanding is that the first movie will cover about 2/3 of the first book. So, and there is like a sort of natural breaking off point, from what I understand. And that I think is where the movie will end. That's my guess. But it's like, I know. I pronounced it so long until like, until he was nominated for Best Director for Arrival. And like they pronounced his name, I was like, I've been saying your name wrong for like ever, because I was always read it that way.
Shows how much I paid attention to that Oscar, that Academy Award.
So I also had to look up how to correctly pronounce the name of the director of our movie of the week this week too. So I do have a correct pronunciation.
Oh, okay. How do you say it?
Miloš Forman.
Miloš.
Yeah, it's just like, it's not Milos or Milos, it's Miloš. It's like there's...
Oh, I thought it was Miloš.
S-H, Miloš. Yeah.
Miloš Forman.
But is that a good segue into...
I think
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, so our movie of the week, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Much to my surprise, honestly. Everyone picked this.
I'm not surprised.
yeah, he's touting himself.
That's a pat on the back for me.
I'm really glad we actually watched this. So I
am too.
I would have been happy with any of the four choices, but I was really glad to watch this.
Would you really have been happy with Gone with the Wind? Really?
Yeah, because I've never seen it. It's number one on my shame list.
Okay. All
right. Even though I decided to spend 3 hours to watch The Sound of Music again, which I've already seen, but adore, and honestly, I don't regret it. Because...
Yeah, well...
My movie is great.
Gone with the Wind is 4 hours of your life you're never going to get back. So.
I need to watch it to either say... it's great or it's not worth the praise. I need to form an opinion for myself, because this whole abstaining from the conversation isn't going to fly for very long, much longer.
Yeah. You go ahead and watch it, and then we'll do a whole podcast on it. Cause I've had to see it twice in my life, and I'm telling you what, it's a rough go. So you watch it, and we'll do a podcast of it.
Yeah.
One day we'll do a bonus episode. So anyway, back to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's nice and short and sweet. So,
synopsis, 10 words or fewer. Should we
take a go? We're doing
I know.
Yeah.
I think, do you want me to, I'll go first then.
Sure.
And then give you a little time to think. Yeah. Okay. All right. So here we go. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in 10 words or fewer. Mental institution patience battle with Nurse Ratchet, window breaks, chief free.
I'm losing it over here.
That's 10 exactly.
That's, yeah, it is. Wow, good job. That's an interesting plot. Okay, mine is not so mental patient, liberates hospital and frees himself.
I will accept it, even though I disagree with
with the ending.
Yeah,
I think he had a plan all along.
I guess which character are you talking about? You're talking about McMurphy or Chief? Okay, I guess that makes more sense too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because you were talking about like faking it, but that is a theme of.
Yeah, which I guess we'll get rid of.
Yeah.
So, way to ruin it.
Oh yeah, we've like.
I'm just kidding.
So, off the bat, I think we should say this is like going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, but this movie came out in 1975, and you've probably stopped listening already if you...
You've had 45 years. You've had 45 years. It's time to let it go.
Yeah. But this is the first time you've watched it, right? You had never seen it before?
Yes. Yes, I've never seen it before. So, and that was it's been number one on my shame list for a long time. So yeah. I've always wanted to get around and seeing it. I've seen like every other young Jack Nicholson movie there is, except One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is supposedly like an all-time classic, one of the greatest movies of all time. So I definitely, I'm glad I saw it. So I have some thoughts.
I'm interested to.
So
to I don't know even what you know. Think.
I don't even know where to begin. So where should we start? So One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was it the first, if not only, clean sweep at the Oscars? I know. Silence of the Lambs did it. Was it the first?
It was the to do that? Second of three. So second of the three. Most recent, is Silence of the Lambs, and it happened. It happened one night. Is the only other one.
Yes. So when we say clean sweep, we mean best actor, best actress, best director, best writing, and best picture of the year. So all five, winning all five of those categories. And One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was the second movie to do that. So. It obviously won Best Picture, and I had no idea that Michael Douglas was a producer.
I didn't either until rewatching.
No clue.
I like none. I saw that in the credits at the very beginning. I was like, "Is it that Michael Douglas?" I was like, I hated to do it, but I was like, "It's early enough. I have to look at my phone." I was like, "I need to know if that's the Michael Douglas," and it was.
I wonder, like, how old was he at the time? Like 25?
Must have been. He won that before he won his acting Oscar.
Yeah, like I'm 32. Look what I've done in my life. Jeez. So best actor went to Jack Nicholson, which I think was well deserved. I don't think I've seen many of the movies that were nominated for best actor, but I think he gave a great performance. So Louise Fletcher as Nurse Ratched won best actress. I have some thoughts on this because I don't think today, by today's standards, that would hold up as a best actress category. I think that would be best supporting actress.
I am so glad you brought that up because I think the same thing. Yeah, the same thing.
Yeah, I was thinking it the whole time. I'm like, how did one like I don't even know if I would put her as a winning actress for that. And two, that is definitely not an actress, a full on actress role. That seemed to me more of a supporting actress role. But if you want to, if you have thoughts on that, take it away.
I think my kind of thoughts are. Number one, like, I think it's, like, deserved. I think it's, like, she's, like, one of the best villains of all time. And, but, regardless of its lead or supporting. But I think if this movie were released today, there is no way she would be put in a lead category. Like, that would...
Not at all.
...automatically be supporting, like, under any circumstances. The only time... it ever happens, like, and this is sad and kind of gets into like a little bit of sexist politics, but the only time if there's a debate of whether a role for a female is lead or supporting is if it's like a female driven movie. So like a great example is The Favorite, where like, oh, who's lead and who's supporting, and they decide to go with Olivia Colman as lead. This also happened in 2002 with the movie The Hours, and they were like Nicole Kidman and like Meryl Streep, Julianne Moore. They're like, who's lead and who's supporting? But those are all like female, those are like only females like in the sort of categories. But like if you're a woman and like you share the screen like with almost all men, like, and you're not a romantic interest, you're like gonna be, you're just like delegated to supporting. Yeah. And that's like crazy to think, like, so it's like cool in a way that like they're like, oh yeah, this like went up to a supporting, or I'm sorry, went up to a lead role, but like at the same time it's like interesting. I'm like, I'm primed to like think another sort of way, so it kind of messes with my whole perception, and I like that idea, but I have no idea what the sort of politics were at the time.
Yeah. So I know, like, when I was thinking this, for example, if you look at, let me back up. If you look at movies today and, like, female lead roles and compare them to films in the 70s, the 60s and 70s, female lead roles have a completely different perspective today than they do then. I feel like lead roles from women that women give today are more from their point of view. They are clearly the lead character in a movie. They're the leading lady of the movie. And they don't necessarily need to be like the damsel in distress or need to have like a man by their side the whole time. Movies today can be led, dominated by women. Whereas movies back then in the 70s, and I know it like really wasn't that long ago, which is kind of sad, the leading ladies back then always were like the damsels in distress or like the woman who needs to be like by a man's side. There weren't really that many opportunities.
A romantic interest period, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There weren't really opportunities for women like there are today in Hollywood, even though we still have a long way to go. There were not opportunities for women back then. It was a very male dominated industry, and it still is, but not as much as it was back then.
So it's so interesting to me that like Louise Fletcher was able to kind of like break this mold too, because Louise Fletcher like wasn't this like Faye Dunaway, like Jane Fonda, like characters. Like she was an actress, but she wasn't like that well known. And so so like the fact that she was able to kind of like get in there for a lead role.
Well, she was
in a non-romantic.
She was more of like. She was more of like an Ellen Burstyn actress. Like she was like, she wasn't there. She didn't want the spotlight of like, you know, I'm the most beautiful person in the room. She was an actress. She worked hard. She was a hardworking actress. And people knew that, like people knew she was there for her talent, not for just her beauty, which she was a beautiful woman, like way back in the day. And she, you know,
she's still,
she's still a beautiful lady. but no, she was not like, like Ellen Burstyn, like I watched an interview with her a couple weeks ago, and she was talking about her career and how she just kind of came into the spotlight. But she didn't start out as like a model, like a Marilyn Monroe or a Faye Dunaway. She's not one of these models, like not one of these sex symbols of the 70s. She was she wanted to be taken seriously as an actress, and she definitely was. And you know, her Oscar nominations prove it. And I think it goes the same for Louise Fletcher.
It's so sad that Ellen Burstyn doesn't have an Oscar.
I know. Well, she's what, a 3-time nominee?
She should have gotten it for Requiem for a Dream.
I agree. anyway,
I digress
on my film history of the leading ladies of Hollywood. We could take a women in film class here, but
I know
we only have an hour.
We'll get Carly back on, friend of the pod, Carly back on.
Yeah, really. Yeah. We need Carly here to put us in
set
our
us straight.
So, really.
Though it does remind me, this conversation is like sort of paralleled to something that I'm very interested in too, which is the idea of like queer Oscar theory, and it has to do with the idea of like romance and who gets nominated for Oscars for romantic movies. And if you take a movie, say like Silver Linings Playbook, which is a straight romance, it's like without question, it's Jennifer Lawrence in lead and Bradley Cooper in lead also, like a male and a female. If you take a gay or lesbian romantic movie, one of them is always put in supporting, and I think that is like a dangerous sort of narrative, because it's like says that like one is lesser than the other, right? And
take Brokeback Mountain,
Carol, like Call Me by Your Name, like Armie Hammer was campaigned and supporting there, but like all of them are like gay and lesbian movies, and one of them is always supporting. So, and that's just, they do that for like political reasons, not like anti-gay, or at least sensibly anti-gay, but like to do that because they want to like a higher chance of winning.
Well, I will say with Call Me by Your Name, I do believe Armie Hammer was more of a supporting work too. Timothée Chalamet was more of the leading, but I see what you're saying.
It's every single one.
Against Call Me by Your Name.
Oh,
yeah. No, yeah.
And like
I'm just saying, I will argue for Call Me By Your Name, because I Timothée Chalamet, I do believe was like was a true leading character in that movie, where Armie Hammer was not.
But so anyway. Even like, but something like a Carol is even more backwards, because like, I think there have been screen time breakdowns. Rooney Mara has more screen time in Carol than Cate Blanchett, and like it was campaigns like the Oscar. Carol is actually like Therese's story, so it's like
that
doesn't make any sense.
That I agree with. Yeah, that I don't agree with. The Rooney Mara was definitely. I remember being shocked by that. I had no idea. Like how do you come up with that? Yeah. But hopefully we're moving in a different direction. And I also don't like classifying, you know, Call Me By Your Name as like, or Brokeback Mountain, it's a gay love story. It's a love story. That's what it is. Like, can we not like, I think we need to start moving away from like the gay title, even though I don't know how you feel about this, but I don't think we should be classifying it as like a gay romance.
Well, like,
there could be, I know there are arguments for it and against it, but it, that's just my
in point. Those movies in particular. So what kind of makes something like a gay romance or a lesbian romance is that those people like have to go through different sort of social barriers to like get to their love or to express their love differently than the way that a straight couple would be able to go to. And most of the time that is part of a story. So like part of like a gay story is like whether it's hiding that feeling. And those aren't even a factor in straight love stories.
But like, are you gonna like call like loving a mixed love story, or like If Beale Street Could Talk, a black love story? It's like I just,
but those
don't...
are different because you can't, so the part of the gay experience, or in at least closeted gay experiences, like hiding that sort of part about yourself when the based on the color of your skin, that is something that you cannot hide. So that's why that is like different.
It makes sense. But so anyway,
did not expect to go on this like little side route.
Anyway, back to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
All that was to talk about how like people are campaigned and lead and supporting at the Oscars.
Yeah. Back to Louise Fletcher. Yeah. So some other surprise, like, not cameos, but actors. Like, so you've got a young Jack Nicholson. Yeah. We all knew that, but like, I was shocked. I didn't look at the cast because I had no idea who was in it. A young Brad Dourif, who we all know from Lord of the Rings and Child's Play, and other movies as well. But I was like, whoa, is that Brad Dourif? Like, he was like a child. And then obviously a young Danny DeVito, who I had to like rewind and say like, is that Danny DeVito? He was, my mind was blown. My head did like a 360 or a 380. I was like, holy crap.
I'm so happy.
I was speechless.
Bit my tongue. Like, no one knows that. Like, no one knows Danny DeVito is in this movie. And it's like such.
Or like, he's a serious
actor. I know. God. He is a great actor. I will put it. He's a great actor. But like, you're used to seeing him in comedies. But no, it's such a shock. And like, I didn't want to say anything because I remember my reaction to finding out Danny DeVito was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I had the same reaction. So
yeah.
But now our listeners have been spoiled. So if you haven't seen it, at least.
Well, you already got your word.
Exactly.
So, I know Jack Nicholson won Best Actor, Louise Fletcher won Best Actress. Brad Dourif was nominated for Supporting Actor. He did not win, even though I thought he gave a better performance, honestly, than Louise Fletcher. Like, I don't think Louise Fletcher did it for me. I know she's supposed to like go down as one of the greatest like all-time movies of all time. Like, I just I didn't really understand the appeal. I thought her character was kind of boring. I kind of felt like anyone could have played that role. I thought, yes, she did a good job, but I did not see the appeal, I guess, because I'm so desensitized to movie villains. She just didn't come off as creepy to me.
So what?
Not creepy, yeah, but horrifying.
What makes her, in my opinion, like such a great villain is what she represents and like how she comes across too. Is she represents the sort of like institutionalization behind this. And this is the sort of theme of the movie, or one of the many, but of like power and power struggles. And so she like constantly is showing off her power like to all the patients in the institution. And she does this in like these sort of like microaggressive ways of like holding a vote. Honestly, it reminded me a lot of the Republican Party, but like it was like,
let's not go down that road.
it reminded me of this, like, if there's a scene where they hold a vote of like whether they're gonna have the World Series or not, and she's like, okay, yeah, let's do a vote. And then like they have the votes, and like they, after like lobbying, they get the votes, and she changes the rules or like withholds key information until the very last second. She's like, sorry, we just adjourned the meeting like before you had all the votes. And you're just like, oh no, you didn't. And so like, yeah, she does like all these like sly, creepy tactics. It's because she can like sense she's losing power to Mick Murphy, who is played by Jack Nicholson. And so she does this like time and time again, like throughout the movie, like withholding cigarettes, like stupid things, like just to show her like small power that she has over people. And like she wants to keep like McMurphy in the institution, even though everyone else wants to like let him go because he's like faking it. And
yeah,
but because she just like wants to have that control over him. So it's that sort of thing. And she like is so emotionless throughout the whole thing. Like she has no empathy whatsoever. And so like that's why, like, it's just like, how can you be so like emotionless? Like, how can you have no like,
yeah, so I guess
wherewithal to do anything. Sorry, I'm rambling.
Yeah. Oh no, you're fine. So I guess one of the scenes that really stood out to me, as you mentioned, it was I guess she's meeting in the board where she's kind of sitting in the back wall, but she's kind of meeting with the board members of this hospital that Jack Nicholson and the inmates are in, not the inmates, but the patients are in. And she doesn't speak up so much as she's asked what her opinion is on keeping Jack Nicholson there. I shouldn't call him Jack Nicholson, McMurphy. And the I guess the head of the hospital turns to her and says, well, what do you think from the, because they all want to release him because they all think he's faking it. They all think McMurphy's faking it to be in there so he doesn't have to go to jail, right? So he turns to her and he says, well, what do you think? Do you think we should release him back into the work camps or whatever they're called? And she says, well, I think, you know, we still have some work to do with him. I'd like to keep him here and observe him. So to me, I guess that was, I don't know. I don't want to say like it made her weak, but why didn't she speak up earlier? Why didn't she say something earlier? Why was she wait to be asked by the men of the room what her opinion was rather than just speak up and be more assertive? I don't know.
That's not really her character though. She's not one to speak up. Like she's not someone a person to like interrupt other people or really say something. She's calm and collected and waits for her time to strike, essentially. And that's exactly what she did. She does that in like the group therapy sessions too. So
yeah. So it's also like it's very, very hard for me to see her as a villain because Jack Nicholson or McMurphy in this role is, he's your classic anti-hero, right? He's like, he's a clearly a bad guy who was in jail, who's here, who pleaded sanity to try to get
for statutory rape, by the way. it's not a small thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And he like tries to go off and justify himself And then like by the end, you find yourself rooting for him and you're like, oh my God, what the hell am I thinking? Why am I rooting for this like disgusting, awful person? But it's because of the relationships he forms within the hospital and within the ward. So you shouldn't be rooting for him. So I was so conflicted on his character and back and forth the whole time where it just made Nurse Ratched's character so, I guess, watered down as a villain.
Well, like,
the character,
I think like what makes like a good villain is all villains like think what they are doing is good, is like for someone else's benefit too. So
yeah,
she like embodies that well. She's doesn't like have this like maniacal sort of plan. Like she's doing it for like the health and safety of the patients. And like she makes some like sound arguments of being like the rules like are like that way, or we can't turn down the music because there are elderly patients I can't hear. Like she always has like a reason for her like vile. And like, that's why I find her so fascinating. And like, you can't crack her. She's like an uncrackable character. Even when she's being like choked to death, she like kind yeah. of comes yeah. back from it all like later. So
yeah. So can we also talk about like how this movie like treats women? Like not only is the main villain of the movie a woman, but like the other two like prominent women in the movie are very much kind of considered whores and sluts, like who are only there to party and have sex with men. And I was kind of thinking the whole time, like this movie, like these characters would not hold up today in the Me Too society. In our current day and age, I do not think they fit the zeitgeist at all. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but I was like kind of taken aback on just how women are treated, and just so it's just kind of gross to me.
The one thing that I'll say is the most questionable is kind of potentially the like pimping of candy. They get it. They kind of, and like peer pressure Billy into having sex, even though he kind of says he doesn't want to. And like, they don't even ask Candy if she wants to really have sex with Billy. And then they just like kind of like literally push them into a room for it to happen. So I will say like, that is probably the most questionable thing, but like, I'm like a sex positive person. Like I don't have a problem with like, a woman playing like a prostitute, if like that she seemed to be like doing it by choice. It wasn't, you know.
I don't have a problem with a woman playing a prostitute. I think it's fine if the role fits, but I just don't think the movie handled the way they treated the roles well at all.
Difficult sort of question is, I definitely don't have a problem with her, with like Nurse Ratched being a villain, at least I say this as a man, obviously, but I don't have a problem with her being the villain, because I think it's better to be like a villain and a sort of more interesting character than to be like a character with no sort of personality traits and like an object, so to speak. So I think that's better. So I don't necessarily have that problem. But like, this is where sort of the issue kind of comes in when you're talking about like women portrayed in a movie, of like, this is more or less like, this is a man's story, right? So it's McMurphy / kind of the Chiefs, and we'll get into that in a little bit too. But like, in taking place in an institution, like a mental institution that was like male dominated. Now, so like, you can't like get out of the like parameters of that story, of that setting. So like obviously there aren't going to be that many female characters, right? So like, this is where the catch-22 kind of comes in, of where like how do you like introduce like good female characters or interesting female characters if like the setting confines you to one sort of way? The answer really is to have women writers and directors, right? Because they're like the ones, because they're going to be, they can like add the women's voice more so into their, and to have like women as a main character, right? I think that that's like really sort of the answer, but like it is this sort of like catch 22 moment of like you're gonna have like fewer female characters in like a male dominated story, but like you can't like blame story to say it's just it happens time and time and again. Like this happens over and over and over again throughout the course of all movies, so like when you add it all up,
see,
it,
like,
it doesn't equal.
I feel like this is like the new millennium effect. Like I feel like in today's new movies, like, or in today's movies that are released, I see them from a whole different point of view, which is why it's difficult for me to go back and watch old movies, because we are used to, you know, women writers, women directors, and more women in the industry having a voice. And it's, you do see that it's very prominent in a lot of movies nowadays. And we are in a day and age where we have to be sensitive to objectifying women and treating them as sex objects. And which is why, like, why I say, like, I go back and I see this. If I saw this movie in the 70s, I would see it today. I would just see it with a completely different set of eyes. I would be, even movies like I saw as a kid, I like in the 90s, early 90s, I go back and I can see with a completely different set of eyes. I don't know if that's just like me being older and more mature than I was, or the fact that we live in a new age, a new age of how we treat people, of how we classify people and all that. So
again, this is like,
I don't know. It's an interesting study,
but I've been watching something to a lot study of further. Like older classic movies because I want to get them off my bucket list while we're in quarantine. And like, I've been watching movies that have been honestly excellent, like movies like Sunset Boulevard and Singing in the Rain, which I had never seen before. But both of those movies are instances of like men in their 30s literally like going after like 19-year-old women, and it's like I'm like, this isn't like a tad creepy, because it's like I say a tad because it's played off almost as an afterthought, like oh, how old are you? 19. Okay, I'm gonna make out with you now. Like, what? So it's like watching like Gene Kelly go after like Debbie Reynolds. It's like okay. But like everything else other than those, like other than the very odd sexual politics that are just kind of brushed aside, like the movies are amazing. So but like that's a sort of like example of like, oh my god, this is like, this wasn't even a thought like back in the 50s, and like
right, but,
like
exactly.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
so like
today,
thinking about
like it doesn't hold
like
up,
when I think about
question.
Singing in the Rain, like I think about like the amazing like music and dancing, like right, like my first initial thought isn't necessarily about like the creepy storyline. So it's like interesting how our perceptions sort of like evolve over time and how we go back and revisit. So anyway, I'm fascinated by this all.
Yeah. It's very interesting how our perceptions do change. You know, I there are movies I would love to rewatch again.
I'm sure women listening to this are like, it was always
creepy.
It
in a long
it was
time
50. It was creepy in the 50s. It was creepy in the 70s and it's creepy now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's creepy now. Yeah. So yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Please. Yeah. If you ever want to guest star and put us in our place, please feel free to do so. So it was the same movie released back then as it is now. So you just
I was
going to
say something else. But
so anyway,
I digress our subtitle. I'll come back to Brad Dourif and Billy. Billy, my heart, Billy. I adore Billy. And It's yeah, like his performance is like so good, yeah. And it's like so heartbreaking. I've seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and the moment like Billy came on screen, I was like, oh yeah, I remember Love Billy, and I was like, I'm trying to remember how it ends. Like I knew it ended with the chief like breaking out, or chief, and then like when Billy came on, I was like, oh Billy, and then I was like, what happens to Billy? And I was like, I'm pretty sure he kills himself. And then I was like, right. And of course I was crying. I cried a lot actually watching this.
Yeah.
I cried like 3 or 4 times. And I was like, oh my God, I'm getting super emotional watching this movie. So, yeah. Well, like part of it too is
I don't know.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is great. I think it's like great in terms of depiction of mental illness, in the sense that it gives people with mental illness agency, and they become like characters. Like everyone in this movie like grows, right, and like learns from something, and they're not like limited by their mental illness, right? And I think like that's a very important step and serves a depiction of mental illness, and it does a great job of shining light on the dangers of a lot of what institutionalization can provide, like So excessive use of electroshock therapy, and like in the end, yeah. Oh, it's so painful. Yeah. And at the very end,
those scenes were very
McMurphy gets a lobotomy, and lobotomies are just like pure literally torture. So and like that's what leads to Chief to suffocating him and in his sleep. And like those were like horrible, horrible ideas. And the fact like this shines like a light on this movie and the book before it like helped like shine a light on a lot of these issues. And now we don't really do those things anymore. The one thing that I will say that is like potentially questionable is that like most mental health care professionals, I mean, by most, like all of them actually are sort of like empathetic. They like do care and like, do want to like help you and listen to you and like take all your like thoughts and opinions into account. They're like not Nurse Ratchets essentially. So that is the one thing I'll say, but like you wouldn't have a story if like Nurse Ratchet didn't exist. So
yeah. Well, as you said earlier, Nurse Ratchet, she's like the embodiment, the embodiment of someone, of the terribleness of the system. And everything, and how bad, you know, people can be, and how bad people can get, who deal with patients like that. One thing I don't like about movies that, or in general, like how we treat people with handicap and disabilities is the fact that we treat a lot of these people like children, and like characters and people talk to people with handicap, people with disabilities like children. And I really liked, I thought it was kind of a breath of fresh air how Jack Nicholson or McMurphy treated these people like they were his like equals, and they were like his friends. He didn't treat them like he was like leading a class of kids. One scene that stuck out to me was there's a scene about halfway through the movie where McMurphy kind of does a jailbreak of the hospital and releases a bunch of patients and takes them all on a boat. He takes them to a marina and they finally are able to get off on a boat. And he's the handler, the head honcho of the marina comes out and says, "Who are you? Who are you?" And he kind of goes down the line and says, introduces each person who's on the boat. And he says, "This is Dr. So-and-so. This is Dr. So-and-so. This is Dr. So-and-so." And you see all their faces light up and they look like kind of like how proud they were like to be there and how happy that he was like calling them Dr. So-and-so. This is Dr. So-and-so. Obviously like he was lying to get them to go out and go fishing. But like once they went out fishing, like he taught them all how to fish. He taught one of the patients how to steer the boat, how to drive the boat. And he's like, yeah, I trust you with it. You can do it. You can do it. I know, like, he did it for, like, the wrong reasons, like, because he just wanted to. he brought a girl on board and he wanted to, you know, he brought Candy on board and wanted to, you know, do the do. But, like, they were all having a great time because they were treated like human beings rather than children. And I thought that was kind of a nice touch on the movie. I really like
what, yeah, what he was able to break through
the
way that Nurse Ratched
and the patients. I thought that was really good. Was not. Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to get down to it, I guess One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is kind of like a yin and yang of like the good, the bad and the ugly of how we deal with patients with disabilities and the good, the bad, and the ugly, and they kind of represent.
I know this. This like movie like does deal with like a lot of,
that's deep, of man.
Complex
that's deep.
Emotions and conflicting loyalties, right? Yeah. Like again, like by rooting for McMurphy, you're rooting for a convicted rapist.
Right.
Like yeah. So, it's
exactly. Yeah, that's, you know, why call him and I. I don't even know if you can call him an anti-hero. He is. I mean, I think he is an anti-hero, but yeah, it's just like, I just find myself like disgusted at the end, like rooting for him. But then you're just like, yeah, I guess I just felt so much love I felt so much love for the empathy he had
like,
for the patients and
it's
the way he
treated
really
them. It's interesting. I think it's a great movie. I'm like so glad that I had rewatched it. I haven't seen it in over 10 years. So it's really.
Yeah. Yeah. It took a lot. It was a movie that ended and I was like, wow, that happened. And then when you go back and talk about it and you think about it a lot, it's a movie that you need to let settle in and really think about.
It's a
commentary on
high school.
How we treat the disabled in this country.
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
It's super controversial.
I'm shocked because I know a lot of high schools.
I went to a Catholic high school, so like I'm
there was a lot of controversy.
I know, like how, like I don't know how this book got its made its way through. We were able to.
Oh my god!
Read it, and like high school lit classes. I'm sure yours were probably like mine too. Like you can never get the class to agree on anything. Like, right. Like there's always some people who like hate like this book or like everyone hates it, but like you never get to like a consensus of like everyone like really liking the book. And the only book throughout my entire 4 years of high school that like in all my lit classes that everyone agreed like, wow, that book was really good was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Like everyone in our class loved it. We watched the movie after we finished it, which is why the last time I saw it was in high school. Yeah.
Really?
And, but so the book is from the point of view of Chief, and he's like the main character, at least in the sense of he's observing everything and observing McMurphy and Nurse Ratched and everything that's going on at the hospital. So it's like it's really the book differs from the movie in that sense. And I think like both are excellent because like the movie is able to change enough about itself to like make it stand on its own as a movie, like whereas the book can stand on its own as a book. So they're both great. Not that I remember. Minor character.
Okay, I thought there was a character in the book that they took out of the movie, which I was surprised to hear. I've never heard this. I was surprised to hear that they didn't want to touch on the gay character that was in the book because like this was the year right before the year Dog Day Afternoon came out, which is like of course surrounds a gay character. But I don't know like I don't know why. This was like the sexual revolution, you know, like why would they do that? But I knew it was still like not the hip thing to do back in 1975.
I don't know. I should reread it. Anyway, I'm in my room right now looking at it. My very torn up copy.
Dale Harding is the character, the unofficial leader of the patients before McMurphy arrives. He's an intelligent, good-looking man who's ashamed of his repressed
looks homosexuality. Looks like I will be rereading Harding's one for the yet, Cuckoo's Nest.
Malcontent wife is a source of shame for him. Dale is in it. So, yes. All right. So that's the thing is Redford plays Dale. So the guy who, the guy with the mustache, So that's what I read. So he is gay in the book, but they don't bring it up in the movie. I guess maybe it's implied, but it's not brought up or talked about. And I guess I don't know why. But I feel like
I guess there was a need for him
to leave it out.
I barely remembered Billy killed himself. I do remember like some differences. I remember like the World Series, watching the World Series. That was like a huge scene in the book. And I think, I don't know if they ever made it clear that it was a lobotomy in the movie that McMurphy gets at the end.
They don't make it clear. No, it's more of, I mean, you see the scars. So you can assume he had a lobotomy, but
yeah. It's like that
simple brain surgery or an operation that they performed, but I assumed it was a lobotomy. So especially after like the several,
and I feel like they talk about the sink a lot more in the book,
very hard to watch,
for like whatever reason. The book is like filled with like a lot of scenes, right? So like scenes that can be condensed in a movie. So like there's like a million different gambling sessions or like group therapy sessions instead of just like two. So like that, those are the sort of differences in the book versus movie. That I remember. Again, it's been a long time since I've read it.
I'm curious.
Pretty short.
I'm curious to read it now.
I'm looking at 272 pages.
Yeah.
You're more than welcome to have my copy once. Is all cleared. I mean, speaking of quarantine, I'm like ready to take my kitchen sink. And
you can mail it to me so I can read it in quarantine. Anyway.
Get out of my apartment. For real.
Check yourself into a mental institution. And have some camaraderie at least. I don't know how much longer I can do this. Not the podcast. This is a special extended edition podcast.
I'm really glad we have something to do. Watch this. So.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, and I think we should do more like this, more like discover more classical movies, like we did. I really like that idea, and I always like get a little, I don't know why, this sounds weird, but I always get a little hesitant to watch old films. I always feel like I'm going to get bored or like lose my attention, but this one definitely didn't lose my attention at all. I really liked it. I don't have a lot of patience for like a lot of like the classic like black and white movies, like especially the ones without audio, like the ones without talking. I can't do those at all. But like, I don't know. I hate 80s movies. I hate 80s movies so much. Don't ask me to watch Pretty in Pink, because I will not do it. I do not like John Hughes. I like some like 80s horror, but that's about it. But like, I like old classic movies.
I'd love to do this, especially because
I'd be open to exploring more. So we should definitely do this
for whatever reason. It's intimidating because shameless. Like number one, you're like, yes, I know this is like a well-loved movie and I should have seen it by now. I just haven't. So like, there's all this like talk of people hyping it up, of all the people who have seen it. Like you feel like you're left out of the conversation, and like two, like you feel removed because like you're from a different era and it's like, I wasn't alive in the 70s. So like, I don't know if I'm going to relate.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm always afraid, like, if I won't like a movie that is just so beloved and renowned by everyone, that like, what's wrong with me? Am I a bad cinephile? You know, I'm like, I'm glad I like this one.
There's
but,
such
you know,
thing as a
if I don't like the next one,
bad cinephile.
Call me a bad movie lover. So.
I mean, actually, I'm sure there are, but I would not classify you as a bad cinephile. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I knew.
Like Deep Dark Secret, I don't really like
that. Also, wrong with it. You are Wizard very anti 1939.
That got me. I don't really like Wizard of Oz that much.
Like, and, like, screw that year.
There you go. I know, I really am. Yeah, it really is a bad year for movies. Oh, wait a second. Yeah, I don't know the appeal. I mean, I'm sure it was amazing at the time. I'm sure it was great. I just remember, like, being a kid and, like, having to, like,
yeah,
make it, like, just like, sit through that.
It is kind of cool to watch, like,
over and over again.
Things
like,
that
my mother
you can appreciate,
me watch
too. Like,
roll my eyes.
Easter, I watched I The Ten Commandments, so that was a long haul. Yeah. So, 4-hour movie. Oh my God, they could, speaking of long movies, they could easily cut an hour from The Ten Commandments, short. Is one of them. Yeah. But, like, and so, like, I didn't, like, love the Ten Commandments, but, like, there were certain aspects that I, like, totally could appreciate. And part of that was, like, the Cecil B. DeMille of it all, of, like, oh, my God, like, I'm looking at a scene that has literally thousands of extras. Like, today, that would be all CGI. And it's like, oh, my God, that is so impressive. Just to, like, see, like, what they used to do and just like kind of get my mind on that, like, so I there are certain things that you can appreciate by like watching old cinema that I like, but like other aspects that are questionable.
Yeah, so like there is a magic, there is something to practical effects as opposed to visual effects. Like, that's what makes, you know, Jurassic Park one of my like all time favorite movies, is because of the practical
automatronics,
effects, because of the how do you say it? Automechanics of the dinosaurs, automatronics. Thank you, the dinosaurs, and like the visual effects are so sparsely used in the original Jurassic Park, and it just makes the practical effects so magical and so special. They did the same thing with Star Wars, you know, the Death Star, the ships, all of them, they're practical effects. They're not visual effects. So today, like, that's what I'm saying. Like today, like the visual effects, yes, they're great. They're cool. They're awesome. They're fun to watch, but like, they don't have the same magic, the same charm that like movies in the '80s and the '90s did. Or even some of the 2000s, like Jaws, the shark today, that would be all CGI. There's something so awesome, so cool about seeing that robot on screen and making it move. I feel like it's way more, it's just what it's, there's something about the visual effect, the visual effect of the practical effect.
Two things. Number
that just
one
makes a movie stronger,
say
in
that,
my opinion. So,
like, old movies that you don't know a lot about, like, can be really good because you just, like, sometimes you don't know anything about them. Like, I had no idea how much I was going to love Sunset Boulevard before I started watching it. And then, like, I'm watching Sunset Boulevard and, like, the main character, Norma Desmond, is, like has, like, the sassiest, bitchiest one-liners. And I'm like, this is amazing. Yeah, I know. Like, I'm shocked she is not a gay icon because, like... But like,
yes, girl,
the road
yes,
she
girl.
Paved for all the people down the road is like, like so clear to me, and like all it must have all started with her too. And but like, I'm sitting here watching this like 1950s this movie from literally 1950, and I was like, oh my God, I was like, I am like living for it, like these moments, and like I never expected that. Like, I roughly knew what Sunset Boulevard was about, but just to watch like all that kind of happen on screen was like so cool. And I'm like, I'm really glad I like watched this movie, and quarantine is like the best time. I like, this is the only time I'm like ever going to be able to do it, because like, if something is scary, like, meaning a movie, like if a movie, I'm scared to watch a movie, like I won't do it. So like, it's way more likely I'll do
I'll watch something that makes me like feel good that I've seen before, like The Sound of Music, to be honest. And but like Sunset Boulevard is scarier to me to watch. So like, this is better. This is the time for that, because you're never going to make time for the scary movies. So like, you have to just like hunker down and do it. And like, I'm really glad that I'm like into this. So I'm on board with this, doing this again. And second thing, oh yeah. The second thing I'll bring up real quick is I'm glad you brought up Jaws, because Jaws came out in 1975, which is the same year as One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I know. And like, honestly, not much else outside
it was a competitor.
The like technical categories. Like, it wasn't nominated for director or acting or anything.
Yeah. Well, one could argue.
No, I meant Jaws wasn't nominated.
I had to do a whole project on Dog Day Afternoon back in
film. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about the best
Picture like, competitors.
No, that makes sense.
The technical categories.
Other than, visual effects? Mm-hmm. Obviously won best original score. It's one of the greatest scores of all time. And best sound.
Today, it would feel like.
And it won film editing as well.
If it were Jaws versus like One for the Cuckoo's Nest, it would be kind of like the indie movie versus the blockbuster, right? That's what I feel like the narrative would be.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be curious to
see like an updated Jaws, just to see kind of like what they would do with the story. And
it's called The Meg.
I will not. I'm just curious. I wonder what's
Steven Spielberg would. Maybe I'll hate watch it though. Oh, maybe that should be one of our categories.
Have you seen that? Oh my god.
Yeah. Thinking out loud.
Yeah, you should. Well, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, because we've got something coming up, which for our nominations for next week.
Before we get into that, is there anything else?
You'll see. No, so one final thought, and let me hear your thought on this. Speaking of seeing things updated in today's world, I would, for some reason, I kept like going back and thinking about Orange is the New Black while I was watching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I would actually be very curious, and I think it would actually work as like a limited, or like not even a limited, but an extended like series on Netflix or HBO, just kind of delve deeper into the relationships and the individual characters of the institution. I think it would actually make a great series. I don't know if you.
My knee jerk reaction is like, I actually think that's
if you agree,
a great idea. I talked about how the characters are their characters and like have interesting backstories and evolve over time. So I think there's enough material there that's doable.
Yeah. So like, just thinking, like, I feel like I didn't get enough. Like, I didn't get to dive into other, like, Christopher Lloyd's character enough. I wanted to hear more about him, or like Danny DeVito's character seemed interesting. I wanted to know more about him. I really like Brad Dourif. I love Billy. You love Billy. I want to know more about Billy. You know, McMurphy's great. He's a great character. McMurphy versus Ratchet. Yeah, like, I get it. It's fine. But like, I really want to dive into these other characters in this institution.
Yes.
You reminded me of two other
things that happened.
Staff
that members, that I are bigger like in the book that like they don't sorry, that are barely touched on in the movie. Washington, who's like one of the workers at the institution, is like a big character in the book, and they like deal with him a lot. He's like one of like they're like best friends, so to speak. And so they like barely kind of touch on that in the movie. And two, I remember Chief was like a huge football star prior to like his time in the institution. And like, this is like a big key part of his like story. And since he is like faking being deaf and mute, you can't really say that. But they bring it up in like one tiny line in the movie. Like, McMurphy says like, "You look like you played football," and like, that's it. so yeah, but like, to your point, is like, there's so much more there.
That's it. Yeah. That's it.
That would be really cool, actually. I like that idea.
Yeah. I would love to see a limited series on this. I think it would be great. So yeah. Explore more of Nurse Ratched, you know? Yeah. Make me hate her more. Or make her character more convoluted. Yeah, likable. Make her likable.
I like that idea. Do not listen to his Jaws idea, but listen to
Hollywood, if you're listening.
His One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest idea. I know.
It's all Andrew, it's only a matter of time. You know it's only a matter of time. The Exorcist, they're all gonna be remade.
But yeah, that's right. Yeah.
No. There was a sequel. There was a show on Fox that came out a couple of years ago.
Whew. So, all right. Well,
yeah. Anyway,
any Cuckoo's Nest.
One day it will happen.
Additions. The reason why we talked about all
that's our 90-minute masterclass
this is going to be a short episode. We're not going to really have a whole lot to talk about because it came out 45 years ago, and sure enough, we go on for a long time. But that just kind of goes to show how good the movie is.
So. Well, next time, have a little faith. Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great movie. So, highly recommended. If you find yourself stuck in an insane asylum of quarantine yourself, feel free to check it out.
You can watch it $3.99 on YouTube.
I think I watched it on Vudu. It was cheap.
All the sort of rentable places, it's available.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's really,
we'd love
it's
to know what you think.
It's great.
So, you all wanted it,
enjoy
us to watch
it, let us know your thoughts.
We want to know what you think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, our week ahead.
All right. So,
should we move on to our
week ahead? Yeah. So, next week it looks like we're following the zeitgeist, and we are going to be talking about virus movies. So anything where a sickness is a main plot. So i.e. pandemics, zombies, futuristic types of societies, stuff like that.
Yeah, because
so,
I remember I picked Gone with the Wind, and the moment I said Gone with the Wind, you were like,
you went first last week. Did you go first last week? Or? Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So I guess I'll go first this week. So I have my two picks, and we're going to do the same way that we did it last week. Andrew has his two picks. I have my two picks. We're going to put our two together, and then we'll put them out on our social media sites, and you guys have till Wednesday to vote on them, and then the winner will be decided on Wednesday, and it'll be posted Thursday, and we'll talk about it next week. So my first pick for the virus movies. Now, I know you're going to kill me for this. So this is why I said don't get too far ahead of yourself on hate watching, because there's a movie about a virus that I... So let me back up. So I did one movie that I've seen and one movie that I haven't seen. So this is the one movie I have seen, and it's the one movie I love to hate watch, and you're going to hate me for doing this. But the one movie I've been thinking about this entire pandemic is The Happening. And I hate Mark Wahlberg. I love to hate watch The Happening. I hate Mark Wahlberg with a dying passion. I think the movie is so bad that it's actually good. And I think Mark Wahlberg is just like it's one of the worst. It is like worse than like a high school, a bad high school acting performance. It's so bad, it's good. But I like this whole time, like every time I see The Wind Blow, I think of The Happening, like during this pandemic. I'm like, and like, it's just, it's okay. So bad. So that is my number one.
Expect that to come from you.
I know you didn't. Because I did not want to
okay,
be.
Okay, so I knew I that will was also do.
Not a movie you think of.
At least if you don't pick one of the two movies that I have in mind, too. I'll start with the one that I have seen, too. And this is actually one of my favorite movies of all time. Okay. And it's cheating a little bit here, but this is a sickness, which is really about infertility, which leads to kind of the end of the world. And so the movie that I'm picking is Children of Men. Yeah. So
Oh, well, I know what this is.
I haven't
Children of Men.
Yeah, yep. I haven't seen it in a long great time, movie. And so, like, I feel
I'll be happy. I'll be happy.
I consider to be one of my all time favorites. I should have seen it more. So this is like a great opportunity for me to revisit it, and
yeah, really
get to see Clive Owen and Julian Moore. And like Chiwetel Ejiofor is in it, and like there are all these other people in it that you're like, what? They were in that movie? So I think it could be a really interesting revisit. And Alfonso Cuarón is obviously amazing. Roma, Gravity, Harry Potter 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so what's your second pick?
I would not be disappointed if that wins. So. All right. So my second one is a movie I have not seen. Again, a shame movie that I probably should have seen. This movie is supposedly one of the greatest virus pandemic
that was my
zombie movies of all time.
That was also my
in 2002. And that is 28 Days Later.
No. I picked backups. So.
That's why I go first. Okay, well.
No, that's why was my
all right,
one
so,
that I hadn't
that's,
seen.
That's mine. I have not seen 28 Days Later. Have you seen it?
I'm more than willing to watch it. It's like, again, same thing as you. It's just on my shame list of just never having seen it. So.
Yeah, I've seen the beginning, and then I stopped for some reason, and I never started it again. So like I've seen like the first when I say beginning, I've seen like the first 5 minutes and that was it. So I do want to pick up where I left off.
I have
or maybe just start over.
One
so, that's my second choice.
One off the beaten path pick. Don't know which one to do.
So I think you should go with the since I feel like this is the theme, and I think
they're both
Contagion,
Netflix.
We don't need to sit through Contagion
both
again.
Netflix,
I think we should go
the
with the
article
Off the Beaten Path.
Okay, so I don't. Have you ever heard of the movie Train to Busan?
Netflix.
Okay, yeah. So that's gonna be my pick. It's like it is a zombie movie, and
yes,
it's,
I have.
It's a zombie movie. It's supposed to be really, really good.
Okay.
Yes, it's a Korean movie too, and and like. South Korea is so hot right now with the weird
movie,
Parasite.
Yeah,
so like
Korean,
it's a good opportunity. Like Parasite doesn't solely represent all South Korean film, right? So I think it's like a good opportunity to sort of see like what other movies the whole entire country has to offer. So
I've heard Train to Busan is amazing and I like completely forgot about it. So yeah. Well, Snowpiercer is also Korean. So
it's like it's joint Korean and English, and that's also still
what's his name?
So Bong Joon-ho. Yeah.
Anglo-Korean. Yeah. Right.
So
one of the greatest.
Soon to be TV show.
Snubbed. Yeah, I know. I'm not sure if I'm
same, just because I have so much TV. But I know nothing about Train to Busan. So
can I hear?
Like that's why I literally know nothing about it other than it's supposed to be great, and it's a zombie movie, and it's from South Korea.
Yeah, can you tell me your?
It was also
Outbreak.
Was my other one? Yeah,
it was Outbreak.
I was this close to picking Contagion because I was, but then like number one, I feel like that would definitely win too. And also I watched at the very beginning of the coronavirus outbreak. So, which was like it was either late January, early February. And I was like, oh, this is so interesting. And like, so I feel like I watched it long ago enough where I like, don't know if I'd be able to talk about it coherently without watching it again, and I don't know if I, but it was so soon that I, so recently that I saw it, that I don't know if I want to watch it again. So was a purely selfish reason.
Cool. Well, that's fine.
Sure.
My other do you want to hear my other two? I was gonna choose my backups for World War Z.
I've never seen the Andromeda Strain.
I think I we started it in one of my classes in college, and then some reason or another, I never finished it. Or I think we like only watched a clip of it, and I was like very intrigued and wanted to watch the rest of it. And the other one was obviously I've seen.
Kind of glad so. Didn't pick World War Z. Like, I think World War Z.
Yeah, me
is,
too.
Mm-hmm. I know.
There's only like, so much to choose from.
I think there are a lot more like outbreak type movies, but there really aren't. Yeah.
Yeah. There's really not. Yeah. Yeah. I could have gone with Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, like but considering zombie movies take up about like 50% of outbreak movies, like you think there would be more. Yeah. So cool.
Yeah. I just watched, speaking of zombie movies, I watched The Dead Don't Die again the other day. And I don't understand why people don't love that movie. I know it's a little slow, but I think it's it'd be great.
Where did you watch
the
it?
The one with Adam Driver and Bill Murray.
Yeah.
It was on HBO. We have all that. We have that free, everyone has that free trial right now. So of all the premium channels. So it was just on, so I watched it again. And I like remembered how much I loved it. And I know I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, but I really like The Dead Don't Die. And I think if you're like into zombie movies, it's like, it's kind of like a satire on the zombie movie. I think it's really funny. But I guess, you know, some people, a lot of people did not.
I should watch it.
Unpopular opinion.
Yes, you should.
Yeah, it's good.
And you should vote. Tell us what you want us to pick for next week. We got The Happening. We got 28 Days Later. We got Train to Busan, and we got Children of Men. So you can always go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/stepandrepeatpod. And you can go to our Twitter, which is our handle is @repeatsteppod, or shoot us an email at stepandrepeatpod@gmail.com. Give us a vote for next week and tell us what you think about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Thank you so much for listening.
We will see you next week, infected with the virus movies. And until then, it's an honor just to be considered.